Give me a mic check.
How do I sound?
Give me a mic check.
Hello, mic check.
You sound wonderful.
Mic check. Are we recording?
Yeah, we are.
I heard bad feedback from episode one that people didn't like, that it sounded like each of one of us was coming out of either.
But that's what I wanted to do, though. I wanted to have like this panning effect.
Like a nice surround sound?
Yeah, THX. That's what I wanted. I wanted us to do
but
something
But when you
different.
Have your earbuds in, what it sounded like was two creeps on either side of you whispering in your ear.
But
like you're on the train and it's like, hey, what do you think about pop culture? Hey, do you like Perfect Strangers? It was very creepy, and I was one of the voices, and I was creeped out by it.
I just wanted us to be visionaries and do something different within the podcasting realm, because guess what? A lot of podcasts sound the same.
You and me, we've got something special.
We do.
We're sitting here in my basement, looking at Norman Rockwell paintings.
Before we even get into that,
please,
can I tell you that, how many years do I know you now? 20 years? Easy?
Maybe, yeah, yeah.
Maybe 20
I did not
years?
Like you when I met you.
I couldn't stand you either. I thought you were a pretentious snob.
And I thought you were a bro. I remember,
you might have not have been off, though.
I remember spiked hair and a large, unnecessary North Face.
Yes.
So
100%.
So what do you think, America?
Oh, I think we should post photos of what we look like on our Pop Culture Man Children's Instagram page.
Hey.
Oh.
Follow us for all the funds. Is that a sentence?
Yeah, sure it is.
You happy with that? By the way, I'm sick today. You're going to hear some sniffles. I'm not on cocaine. I'm like Slavoj Žižek. The film is about ideology.
I think like five people got that.
The Žižek heads out there are like, yeah. My Žižek impression is, pick anything out in this room and point it out to me. So Amelia pointed to a poster, a Star Wars poster of AT-ATs. This is my Žižek impression. The AT-AT is ideology. That's it. That's my whole impression. The Norman Rockwell. That actually is ideology, actually. The Norman Rockwell. I have collectible Norman Rockwell plates. Remember, ideology is man's imaginary relationship to the real conditions of his life?
Yes.
I believe Louis Althusser said that before he choked his wife to death.
Yeah.
That's the thing about philosophers, is you can't get too into them with the biographies, because they're all tend to be horrible people.
I've been reading a lot of Albert Camus.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jean-Paul Sartre lately.
I believe it's Sartre.
Is it Sartre?
Sartre.
So I've been saying Sartre.
Sartre. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, in class the other day, I was trying to teach the kids that it's not Van Gogh, it's Van Gogh. And then I was like, it's not bros before hoes, it's brach before, if you're Van Gogh.
See, this is why I thought you were pretentious as hell 20 years ago.
Why? Because I make Van Gogh references?
It was just because you have to, what, you get to correct them in their nomenclature?
Well, when you're a professor, you're a professional pretentious person. I mean, what am I supposed to be in that scenario?
Yeah, but this is going back to, I want to say, maybe high school.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children.
We are here. That is Mike Bongiorno.
That's Emilio Sparks. How
Hi.
Are you?
I'm good, man.
Feeling good about episode two?
I loved episode one. We actually got a good amount of feedback, like especially me on Twitter. People were saying...
Yeah, people especially like you, I think.
I don't know about all that, but I know when I tweeted out the link, because we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play,
we're on iTunes,
which is the important one, because we want you guys to go there. So if you get the
rate, review,
subscribe, all on iTunes, get the algorithmins rhythmin', please get the computers to pute. That's a Cameron reference.
Thank you.
And give us a nice little review and tell us what you guys think, because we will move up in the ranks of the podcasting world. Hi, Todd Glass, if you guys allow us to do so. So you do something for us, we do something for you.
That sounds like a weird
deal
we're making with people. We'll do something for you.
We'll come to your house.
Scratch my back a little bit.
Scratch
your back a little bit.
But yeah, so to start off the program, this is the first time I'm in your house, and I know you for 20 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How do you feel?
I love it. It's so cozy. I walk into the house.
Mm-hmm.
What is Mike's dad doing? Making Sunday sauce.
Yeah.
Smells Italian in
it
here.
It does. Was he wearing a shirt? Of course he was not.
No, he was.
Was he?
Yeah.
I thought he wasn't.
No, he
was. He must have sensed there was company coming.
Right.
So put on a shirt. Usually he's shirtless. You know, I was thinking about our living situation as pop culture man children.
It just fits seamlessly
living
into
in
this
our
podcast.
Parents' house. I was thinking, we don't really fit into the stereotype of that.
Because we're good looking?
Well, yes. But the stereotype is like failure to launch, like not wanting to leave. But in reality, America, it's horrible socioeconomic conditions. Like, you and me would both have left if it weren't for the fact that, you know, even as college graduates, we make nothing. How do I sound, by the way?
You sound fantastic for a guy who has the sniffles.
Thanks. When I go like this, when I jiggle, does it do anything?
Well, tell them what you're jiggling.
I'm jiggling the cord on my microphone.
No, we don't. That doesn't get picked up.
Okay.
So I'm looking around here, and you got some interesting stuff, man. For the first time, I'm in Casa de Buongiorno.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was a lot of Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that stuff's not necessarily me, but I love the Wizard of Oz. This is the basement, which is like, I guess it's kind of like a living room, but more and more I've just put my garbage into it.
Yeah.
So there's like Pops and a Ghostbusters firehouse and Legos and alien toys. And
I'm still looking around Mike's basement of cool. That's what I'm going to call it. Mike's basement of cool.
Creative.
I think it is. I love the Ghostbuster stuff.
Notice that's a pillow there with owls as Doctor Who's.
Of course, I've seen that. I also like the little China doll clown.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Again, that's not part of my collection. But let me tell you what's happening in popular culture.
So nice segue.
Adam Driver of Girls in Star Wars fame basically spoiled a big, huge thing from Star Wars The Last Jedi.
What was said? What did he do?
In the first movie, we have the new protagonist, Rey, who we meet on the planet Jakku, and we don't know who she is or where she comes from. So people have, since the movie came out, wondered, is she Luke Skywalker's daughter? Did he give her up to protect her? Is she Han and Leia's daughter? Is she a clone of Luke? There's all sorts of crazy theories, like maybe she's related to Palpatine. Maybe she's related to Obi-Wan, which definitely isn't true.
But are they following with the Clone Wars or no? That's not part
that's
of it.
That's way... Clones exist in that world, but there's no clones in this new movie so far. Adam Driver was being interviewed, and he was just talking about the characters, and he referred to Rey as a princess in hiding.
I mean, so that's not an Easter egg, though, don't you think?
Well, it's one of those things where it's like big and not. It's big because you kind of let a cat out of the bag, but it's not big because everyone knew she was going to be somebody. You know, nobody was shocked that she's somebody. And we still don't know if he meant that figuratively or not. Does that mean that she's a Skywalker, that she's Luke Skywalker's daughter, or does it mean something else? So it's sort of like, it was sort of big and not news.
See, but Luke was never a prince, though. Leia was the princess, but
right.
It was for a planet that ceases to exist.
Right.
So there's no
and
royal...
Luke, but Luke's mother was a queen of a different planet.
Yeah, but does that planet still exist?
I think Adam Driver is being figurative. At least I think.
Is he just calling her a princess to call her a princess?
I think it's like the idea of like she's the lost descendant of an important family. At this point, I would bet my money that she is related to Luke Skywalker.
I believe that they told him to say that.
So you think Mickey's behind the scenes letting things out, leaking?
Mm-hmm. Mickey's telling him, listen, you got to do this.
First of all, that's a great Mickey impression, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Why do you think so?
Because how else are you going to start to drum up
Star Wars attention?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Star Wars is really starred for attention.
No, I'm not saying that it's starred for attention, but it comes out, what, 2019, you said?
No, it comes out in a month.
Oh, okay, never mind that. But I think to really work up a lather, let him drop something that could be taken in or out of a context that you're like, well, wait a minute, whoa. Because we talked about it last episode. It's a continuity-based franchise.
Yeah.
Where they don't veer off the beaten path. So there's planets that they don't talk about no more, and a planet that doesn't exist where their royal bloodline would happen.
Uh-huh.
I'm way too invested in a series that I've never seen.
What I find hilarious is that you've never seen it, but you have all these opinions on it. You're like the perfect American right now.
Ignorant, I'm a Norman Rockwell painter.
You certainly are. Ignorant, but with confidence.
Thank you.
I don't know. She's probably related to Luke. Maybe she's a clone of Luke, or a clone of Anakin, Luke's father, who became Darth Vader. You've got 9 movies happening, and the first 3 are about a father, and the second 3 are about a son, and then the last 3 have to be the same family. That's the point of the not spinoff ones. The episodes are supposed to be about the Skywalker family.
Now, but does she turn good, or does she go down the dark side?
No, she's good. But she might turn dark. Well, she probably won't. They're going to flirt with her turning dark. One rumor that I think is possible is that Kylo Ren, Adam Driver, turns good.
So that means she would have to turn bad.
Or they just are both good.
Or they both fight the evil Liberace together?
Yeah, they both go against Liberace together. So that was a big thing in the news, but also not a big thing.
So what would the army of unbangable nerds saying on Reddit and all these other websites?
I stay off Reddit, and okay. I stay off the dark places of the internet, because...
So you're not walking among the neckbeards?
I mean, I am. There are people out there that seem to not want her to be related to Luke, and I'm not sure why. You know, there's, since The Force Awakens came out, there has been a contingency of nerd who is like, it's so unoriginal. They're just remaking the original ones, and blah, they don't have any fresh ideas. By the way, these are the same people that hated the prequels for doing all those different things and wanted something more. Now that they're getting basically what they always wanted, yeah. they're calling these movies remakes. So there's people who are like, it's stupid if she's Luke's daughter. And it's like, how is it stupid? That's narrative. There's 9 parts in 3 different generations. It should be 1, 2, 3 generations of one family.
I didn't even think of it that way, because I've never watched. But now that you see it, so it's Anakin, and it's his rise and his fall.
Right,
and
then his son.
And then his son.
And daughter.
And daughter, but they don't know that they're related.
Not,
and
there until, was this, not until the last
there
one.
There was this weird Game of Thrones incest thing going on until Han Solo came up and creeped in and slid in her DM and took her away.
Or until George Lucas realized that he's going to make them brother and sister, and he had none of this planned out beforehand. Despite what he says to people.
And now we have this.
Right, now Luke and Leia are old, and you've got a new young generation. I mean, you could say that Kylo Ren, because Kylo Ren is Luke's son, that he's the generational thing, but I think then that still makes Rey nobody. Rey's got to be somebody.
So wait, Kylo Ren is Luke's son?
No, Kylo Ren is Han and Leia's son.
And he's going to fight his cousin.
So we think that if she's his cousin.
What do you think?
I think she's got to be. If she's not his cousin, then the twist is that she's a clone of something. Or... Oh, we're getting so deep into the woods, and this is supposed to be the new segment. All right, this is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm going to bring up divine birth, okay? What is when you...
Immaculate Conception.
Immaculate Conception, that's the words I was looking for. Anakin, Darth Vader, he was born out of Immaculate Conception.
What is he, Christ?
Yeah, he is. He's
Space Christ?
He's a very, very lame allegory. Worse than even... The lion from Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe. Anakin as a symbol for Christ is so heavy-handed.
So he's a space Christ.
Right. I think maybe she doesn't have a father just like Anakin. But she has to have a mother because Anakin had a mother. All right, moving on.
That's ridiculous.
The internet was a... You know, and I said to myself today, like, we shouldn't have too much Star Wars talk because I don't want it to be all Star Wars. And you drag me into it. Every time I think I'm out, you drag me back in.
I know it's the bread and butter of this show.
Yeah. That and Godfather 3 references. Yeah. Sick guy. Remember Zazu? Zazu.
Zazu.
Great villain. Speaking of Zazu, wow, I didn't even mean to make that... Segway
King, Mike Bongiorno.
I don't even know when I'm doing it. Speaking of Zazu, let's talk about the new Lion King, directed by Jon Favreau.
I know him.
Well, he just did this successfully with The Jungle Book. But he also did Chef, and he did Iron Man 1 and 2. Or maybe just 1. No, 1 and 2. Maid, which I thought was a great movie. Swingers.
So I thought Chef was great, too.
Chef, yeah, I did like Chef. He was good in that.
So, I like him as Happy Hogan.
Yeah. He's sort of set for life now.
You know, he just kind of saved Robert Downey's career, that's all. Just throwing it out there.
He brought it back from the grave.
Yeah.
So this cast list is kind of bananas. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah.
So we've got Donald Glover as adult Simba. Coming back to reprise the role of Mufasa is James Earl Jones.
You can't have anybody else do that role.
Right. He's just going to come back and do it. That's just what he does now. He comes back and does... You want to do Darth Vader again? Yeah. You want to do Mufasa? Yeah, same. It's all the same lines anyway. Chiwetel Ejiofor from 12 Years a Slave is playing Scar.
Wow.
Which he's... If you've ever seen 12 Years a Slave, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And the original Scar was Jeremy Irons, who did a great job. So a lot of people see him as coded as queer in that movie. Not in a negative way, but in a sort of like, let's sneak a queer character into a cartoon way. Like, there's a weird line early on where Simba says something like, you're weird, and he says like, you have no idea. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Oh, remember when he sings "And Simba too"? Oh, it gives me chills.
Scary villain.
Well, you know what? Jeremy Irons is just a scary man. He frightens me
Even as Alfred in the new Justice League series, he will scare me as well.
Alfie Woodard is Sarabi, which is his mother, which I don't know if I've ever known her name until just a second. Alfred Woodard, great. Alfred was great as the villain in Luke Cage. Did you see Luke Cage?
Hell yeah, I did.
I love they did a nice switcheroo like three episodes in. Like, nah, she's the real villain.
She's the bad guy.
Zazu, the... No, he's not a parrot. What is he? I think he's a toucan. He's voiced by John Oliver.
Which is like the perfect...
Perfect. Like, I feel like I've heard that before. Like, did he ever, like, as a joke, play it on, like, The Daily Show? Or he's made that joke that he looks like
Zazu? I think he's made the joke that he looks like a toucan because of his schnozzle.
Okay, as Timon and Pumbaa, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner.
You want to talk about just a perfect pairing.
First of all, I love Billy Eichner.
Yeah.
To no end. He's amazing. Eric Andre.
That came out of left field.
Because he's, like, so subversive. Like, his show on his talk show, or talk show in quotes, on Adult Swim is just bananas. He's Azizi. I don't know who that is. Is that maybe, that might be one of the three
hyenas
that hangs around with Scar. And the big one, the one that set the internet on fire, Adult Nala, is played by
the queen.
Beyonce.
The Bay. Queen.
The queen, indeed. Which means she's going to sing Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
And she's going to get an Oscar.
She's going to sing it at the Oscars.
She's going to win an Oscar for it.
You think so?
100%.
That's my favorite song, I think. That and maybe Be Prepared.
Because that is a good vocal range for her, too, that song.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, she's got a beautiful voice. So I think she's gonna crush that. She's going to win an Academy Award for that.
I think she's going to win my heart again.
I mean, she's won that when she was in Destiny's Child back in 1999. You know, I've never seen any of these live-action remakes. I've watched 5 Disney movies my entire life.
Live or animated?
Animated.
That's insane.
Do you want me to list the 4?
Yeah, please.
Sword in the Stone.
Weird one.
Robin Hood.
Okay.
Jungle Book.
Okay.
Dumbo. And Beauty and the Beast.
So you've only seen one princess movie.
I don't know. Was Sword in the Stone was a princess movie? No.
No.
Beauty and the Beast is a princess movie.
Beauty and the Beast, yeah. You know, if you were just to watch a princesses, it's like Beauty and the Beast, Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Little Mermaid. You could kind of argue Aladdin.
See, but I like the animation from the ones in the 60s that I mentioned. Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, that's a cool one. What about The Black Cauldron? Never saw that.
I don't even know what
that's the one
about.
Tim Burton worked on. It's weird and dark.
But I like from the 60s with that old animation where they would take bits and pieces from The Jungle Book and have as Baloo's dancing.
Yeah.
And they would reuse it in Robin Hood.
Right. Well, to give them a little bit of credit, a lot of that was they would watch like real animals move and not dance, obviously, but they really worked hard, Disney, at getting animal movement down, and then they would reuse things. But not as bad as Filmation would reuse things with He-Man.
Oh, that was just blatant.
Literally every episode is the same moments.
But what I like about what Disney was doing, and I read up on it because for some reason I got into this weird rabbit hole of Howard Hughes, RKO Pictures, and the distribution of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which was through RKO. And then I started to read about the animation in that movie.
Right.
And how some of these guys never really drew animation like that prior. So they literally would take classes in the Disney studio, or this makeshift room that was the studio.
This is before they outsourced it.
And to teach human anatomy. And I was like, oh, I gotta watch this film now.
Those early movies are very good. I love Snow White. I think Snow White's pretty awesome. I mean, Snow White's the first feature length. He got a bank loan because he ran out of money. I think he couldn't pay the artist for like a week or so.
He couldn't pay the artist. He also used his house as collateral, and the movie turned out to be one of the highest grossing films.
And it won one big Oscar and
seven little Oscars. Do you want to take a little break, Ski?
Yeah, let's take a break. Let's give him a...
What do you want? You want to give him a movie trailer?
How about we give him the trailer to Snow White?
There you go.
All right. Enjoy this.
The picture that every newspaper and magazine critic is raving about. Hear what the usually hard-boiled reviewer of Time magazine says. Snow White is as exciting as a Western, as funny as a haywire comedy. It combines the classic idiom of folklore drama with rollicking comic strip humor. It is an authentic masterpiece. More than 250,000 paintings like these were created by Walt Disney and his staff of artists to make the most daring adventure in the history of motion pictures, with new and amazing characters. Snow White, warm, human, the lovable seven dwarfs, but let Walt Disney tell you about them himself.
Dwarfs' names fit their personalities. This pompous-looking individual is Doc, the self-appointed leader of the group. And this little fellow is Bashful. He's secretly in love with Snow White. And this funny face is Sneezy. He has hay fever. And old Droopy Eyes is called Sleepy. And Happy here with a beaming smile. And old Sourpuss here is Grumpy, the woman hater. And last but not least is Dopey. He's nice, but sort of silly.
We are back. This is the Pop Culture Man Children Podcast, PCMC, starring MB and ES.
Yeah.
On the iTunes.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Right? It's the longest thing in the world. He likes to think of us as a sculptor. I like to think of us as Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore on the wheel. Mm. We're holding each other, having a moment while we're making a clay pot. And yeah, that clay pot is audio geekitude for you guys listening at home.
I remember when I was a little kid, we were watching that at my grandmother's house. And my grandmother...
You got turned on a little bit?
No, but my grandmother did. She said something like, you know, in her broken Sicilian accent, like he's hot or he's beautiful or something. And it was the first time I even thought of my grandparents as sexual beings. Obviously, it stuck with me. It still disturbs me to this day.
Do you think that when you guys left later on,
please,
that
don't,
they did a role play of that?
Yeah, her and my grandpa did they did exactly that scene with the
right
guy. Yep. That's what happened. All right.
They played the Everly Brothers.
No, they couldn't get the rights. It was too much money.
All right. So what else do we have? What's this segment? Tell the people.
This is our chill segment. This is the segment where we just talk about what we're into. I want you to take it.
Okay.
Talk about Wheelman.
One of my good friends is in this film.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Slane. Big shout outs to recording artist Slane.
Yeah.
He... If you don't know him as a musician, you could know him that he starred in The Town, and he had a role in Central Intelligence with Uncle DJ, as I like to call him,
yes,
Dwayne The
absolutely.
Rock Johnson. It was the scene in the bar when The Rock and Kevin Hart are talking, and the guy comes up and starts to pick a fight with them. And then that's when you see The Rock do all the kung fu and the fighting.
But wait, give us a little bit of a... summary of what Wheelman is, because it didn't get a theatrical release. It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
But
and
it's
you guys,
great.
You have to watch this. I also follow on Instagram, and I follow his career because I'm a fan of his, Frank Grillo.
He's great as the star.
And he played, if you don't know who Frank Grillo is, he played Crossbones in the Avengers movie.
Really?
Yes. That scene where they come out and he puts the mask on.
Really?
Yes.
I missed that entirely.
Yeah.
But I was in love with him in this movie.
I don't want to give this away, but all
don't
I
don't give away the twists and turns.
All
but
I will say is this: he is the driver for a botched bank robbery,
right? And it goes botched, and intrigue happens because we begin to wonder, how did it go botched? Was it botched on purpose? He gets himself caught up in a big web that he's got to get himself out of.
And he had no clue walking into this that this was going to happen.
It's like what I wanted Baby Driver to be. Baby Driver was okay. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible.
This blows Baby Driver out of the
water. Oh, yeah. This is like, this is what Baby Driver could have been to me. His performance holds the whole thing together, Grillo.
He's a really good actor, and I think people need to realize like he's good because he does a lot of martial arts films,
yeah,
and a lot of physical roles, but just to sit there and just be an actor...
And just drive. He's basically just sitting in a car and driving, but he's amazing looking.
Yeah, see, you're a film critic. You're a film professor.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel that... I want to say 75 to maybe 80% of that movie was done in a vehicle.
I thought that choice was absolutely brilliant. When the movie first starts, you just see a sort of static shot of darkness, and then light comes on, and you realize you're in a garage. The perspective is in this car that was parked in this dark room, and then some guy who's inconsequential comes in, takes it out, and brings it out and gives it to Frank Grillo, who's going to be our main guy. But when the guy who I guess works for the car rental or whatever it is leaves the car. We stay in the back of the car. We just see him give the keys to Grillo.
And there's like a muffled, mumbled dialogue
right,
that we can't make out.
Because it's way long shot. It's not even really focused. And we're stuck in the back of the car. I'd say the whole movie's in the car. There's a few cheats that happen later on where you're out of the car. But then at some point it switches to a different car and then we're stuck in that car.
It breaks it up where you don't see like, oh, does he ever get out of the car?
Right, right, right.
So, like, there's certain things. And then there's that dynamic with the daughter. And it's just a really good film. And, you know,
he burns the first car.
Yes.
Like, that's how we, the audience member, it feels like you, the audience members, are actually taken on a ride.
You're in the car.
Right, right. And you're, because he burns the car, and that's what makes the perspective come outside the car. And then he's sort of walking down the street, and but it's sort of weird cinematography. It's sort of like, it feels kind of like dreamy, and the camera's very unsteady, and it's sort of it keeps doing these Dutch angles, and it just kind of feels like we're floating or you know, around him rather than, you know, traditional camera work. And then he gets into another car, and then like we're static again, we're back in a car,
which I like the cinematography in that.
And then
film.
His daughter, who we won't say too much, but the daughter, who is really 13 and plays a 13-year-old, I can't believe that kid's really 13. At one point, he needs her to do something, so he's out of the car, but we're with her in the car, and he's out of the
for like 5 minutes. He's not even in the film.
Yeah, and you're like, what is happening? How are we still with this girl?
And she was great.
She was great.
There was no dialogue. It was just all from a physical standpoint.
Right. She goes from elated to see her father to nervous about what her father's
pure
doing
terror.
To terrified that her mother's in trouble to I'm going to save the day a little bit.
Yeah.
She was great.
She ran through a gamut of emotions in 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it was one of those movies that, like, I don't know, I kind of, like, Do the Right Thing or Clerks. It's one of those movies where it's like, it's one night, it's basically real time. You know, the movie's about 2 hours, and this would be 2 hours of this guy's life. Really, nothing's cut out. By the end of it, you know, I'm going to say, I won't ruin it, but I'm going to say it's a happy ending. He prevails.
There's
goodness
relief.
Prevails, and
there's
it's pretty
definitely
awesome.
Relief, yeah.
But I actually, during it, there was a lot of craziness, and I was like, there's a lot of violence, and I'm like, wow, maybe goodness isn't going to prevail. I totally was like, hey, maybe this has a downer ending, and that's why it got a Netflix release. But I honestly, not to put down Netflix, I love Netflix, this could have gotten a theatrical release, and I think been really good and done really well.
Yeah, especially with the success of Baby Driver.
Unless it did have a theatrical release, and
no.
I've never heard of it.
It's a Netflix original, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Because Frank was talking about it. I listened to a podcast about MMA. He was a guest host on that.
He does MMA?
And he boxes.
Uh-huh.
But he also follows the sport, because who doesn't follow UFC? Uh-huh. And he was on talking about how Wheelman is going to be a Netflix original.
Well, it's awesome. Honestly, go and watch it, Wheelman.
And that's why I stress to you. I was like, you have to watch this.
It's so good.
Because I
and
know
when you told me, I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I had never even heard of it.
Yeah. I was like, you have to watch. Like, it's one of those odd Netflix sleepers that doesn't get a lot of promo.
I don't understand Netflix model. They have been making a comedy special a week this year. Stranger Things and a bunch of other TV series and kid shows and movies, and it's like they don't even have the time to advertise it all. Something like Wheelman, which is really good, completely can go like forgotten.
Yeah, and it can, sadly, because I don't think they, even though they have a marketing department and they have all this, the means to, you know, flood us with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows.
They
got to
make choices.
I think they have to make
choices.
They're
like, well, let's put an emphasis on the new Stranger Things coming out, and let's not talk about Wheelman. But then Wheelman, everyone sleeps on it because it ends up being awesome.
If I didn't follow Frank Grillo,
you would have never heard of it.
And know Slane, I would have never heard of it.
You know why it probably didn't get a big theatrical release? Because it was cheap. And movies now have to be, they have to do good in China. And they have, so therefore you spend a lot of money, you gotta make a lot of money, you gotta make everybody happy, you can't be too violent, and, you know, it's a grown-up movie, but it's exciting and cool. It's, you know, in the 90s, Wheelman would have been a theatrical release and done very well. It's only now that the grown-up movies, and it's, I'm not saying grown-up like it's somehow super intellectual, it's, you know, it's an action movie, but it's not with capes and tights. And as much as I love superhero movies, you know, when it comes to theatrical releases now, it's just superheroes and Star Wars and cartoons.
That's it.
And that is it. There's no room for anything else.
No. Well, unless you're Pitch Perfect, but...
Right. But even that's a huge thing that has licensed music in it.
Yeah. It's crazy to me how the scope of movie releases has changed within the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah. This is why Scorsese produces TV shows now. This is why David Lynch did a new season of Twin Peaks. All these great directors that we all accepted as great directors in the 80s and 90s, these guys aren't making movies anymore.
I don't think they want.
Or you're Ron Howard and you just do a Star Wars movie.
I don't think they want to. I don't think they want
to. I think
they
would make theatrical movies if they could. I think they have more freedom on TV now.
To do what they want.
Yeah.
I can't see Scorsese directing a superhero movie. Can you?
Well, he's supposed to. It was teased, or he said vaguely somewhere that he wants to make a movie about the Joker as a criminal. Like, it would be like a gangster movie, but the Joker...
Hey, which, you know what, that doesn't really...
I'd see the hell out of it, but that's a stupid idea.
No, it's not, because didn't you want more of Jared Leto in Suicide Squad?
Oh my God. I wanted less of Jared Leto in every movie he's ever been in. When I see a bad movie...
You think of Jared Leto?
No, I think, oh, at least Jared Leto is not in this.
He's an Academy Award winning actor.
Well, mistakes were made.
Oh, wow.
What did he win an Academy Award for?
Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, he was good in that.
He was fantastic in that.
Yeah. He's mailing rats to people.
That's because he has to get into character.
No, that's BS.
You don't
I
think
hate
so?
That. I hate that.
He's method, just like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, but when your method is torturing other people, screw you. Did you see there's this new documentary about Jim Carrey making the Andy Kaufman movie?
Yes, I did. And we're going to talk about that in the weeks to come because we're both going to watch that.
Sure is. But I'm just angry at the trailer.
Yeah, I know. I know you were seething.
I was like, you know what? Whatever.
Let's not even get into it because you're going to get hot. So what is your chill sesh?
What do I want to talk about first? Let's talk about DuckTales. I've watched the first 5 episodes of the new DuckTales. And it is fantastic.
It's really good.
Have you watched it?
Yes, I have.
The artwork is great. I love Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Webby might be my favorite character, especially I like the scene when she takes the bus for the first time and she goes to lick the pole.
Yeah. You know, it does have childish narratives.
It's supposed to. It's for the Disney Channel.
Right. But at least once or twice an episode, there's a joke that literally makes me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
That has a sort of grown-up, almost like alternative comedy, you know, Adult Swim kind of a, like, mentality to it.
Do you like the tease of Gizmo Duck?
I like the way that they've been teasing a bunch of things. Because Webby's friend is, she talks to her shadow. That's her mom. The friend with the purple hair. Which, by the way, I was watching the episode where they go, did you see the episode where they go down into the sewer?
Yep.
In that episode, you see, like, a full shot of them. And the friend has sneakers on, but they don't. They just have their, like, little flippers. And it's like, how does this world work? Why is it that some people have full clothing, some people have no clothing? Someone like Donald wears nothing but a shirt.
No pants.
What do you feel about Donald being part of it? Because he was not part of the original DuckTales. For some reason, I don't know. He was just like, he like dropped them off with Uncle Scrooge. It was like, okay, I'm off. And then he wasn't really there.
You know, he's like that, okay, well, here's the spinoff. I'm going to go star in the spinoff for like 2 seconds just to let you know that this is still within this universe. Because it has a duck universe.
Right. But supposedly he's living in the mansion with them. And he's had a few storylines.
Yeah, but he's not technically in the cartoon completely. Like, it's not about him.
No, you know? It's not about him. The onus but he's not absent.
No, and which I like that, because it shows that he is the bumbling oaf.
Yeah.
And that his uncle has to save his ass constantly.
I like that bit where he was screwing around in the house, so they kicked him out, so he was living on a houseboat in Uncle Scrooge's pool.
Yeah.
Stealing his electricity.
Stealing his electricity.
I thought that was funny.
See, I like things like that because it shows, like, okay, there's more. Because what is the character of Donald Duck doing?
I guess if you had to describe
him... All those old characters, what are they doing?
I guess Donald you would describe as having a short fuse. Like, he's somewhat affable, but then you could really easily make him angry, and then he sort of flips out on you.
What I don't like about the character, and this is probably going to be really neckbeardy of me, is how inaudible the voice is.
Thank you! I was just about to say that. No offense to the new person who does the voice of Donald Duck, because it's probably more the sound design than you.
Well, he learned from... because you talk out of an air pocket in your cheek.
Right, but you know, you if you go back and
he
I've done this
from
recently,
the original guy.
Go back, yeah, but go back and listen to the original Donald Duck. I could still understand what he's saying.
Yeah,
the new Donald Duck, the voice sounds like the old Donald Duck, but I can't understand it at all.
I can't
all.
Make it out.
I honestly am like, what? I literally, I'm so glad you said that because I thought it was just me.
I have to rewind back because I DVR these and I have to pay attention to what he's saying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? So I'll go back like two or three times. And I'm like, well, what did he say?
That's a problem with the design. That's got to be the sound engineer. It's got to be the way, because they, even though he's doing the voice that he learned, like you said, talking out of the like pocket of air in your cheek, they still do a little something to it.
Oh, they have to, yeah.
They still make the pitch higher. So maybe they're screwing with it. Because they did something weird in the series was they were like, we want to redesign the characters and we want to redesign the way the world sounds. But Donald's too iconic to change. So Huey, Dewey, and Louie, which used to sound just like Donald, they'd be like, Uncle Donald.
Yeah, they had like a quack.
They had a
voice.
Right? I actually had a hard time understanding what they said in the old show. They're now basically just dudes with high-pitched voices.
Which is cool.
But Donald is the only one that still has the duck thing.
Well, he's supposed to, though.
Right. Well, it's because
he's Donald Duck.
Right, but the rest of them used to all sound like ducks. Now he's the only one that sounds
Scrooge
like a duck.
Scrooge never really sounded like ducks.
No,
he had
no.
The voice. But how good is Tennant in that?
Tennant's doing a great job. He really is.
Does he ever not crush any role he's in?
I know. Like, I feel like he's probably, talk about method, he's probably like he goes to the recording studio with his favorite Lucky Dime, and he sits there with a walking stick.
See, now that was a good episode.
What, the dime?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They dispelled that, too, because I remember in the comic books and in certain of the old cartoons or the shorts, that we didn't know what the dime was supposed to represent.
Right, right.
Was it supposed to be lucky where this is where it got to his fortune?
Oh, but how did you feel about that kind of meta moment for us where Huey was going to jump and swim in the gold and Scrooge is like, no, you can't do that. You'll kill yourself. And he's like, why? You do it all the time. He's like, yeah, but I trained to do it. You can't just jump in gold. I love that because it's, you know, it's so true. Like they used to, people used to swim in that gold, and like, but that's so impossible.
See, that's to me, that's what I like about that series is
because that's a joke for us.
Yeah, and even though there are certain tropes from the classic show that they still get away with, they'll look at us and kind of break the fourth wall or give us a joke saying, no, like, only I can do that.
Right. This is something you've always thought about, so we're going to reference it.
Yeah, and no, you're not going to do it because I'm the only one that can do it.
Right, because it's insane. What about Miss Beagley?
I like her in this one more than the original. And I like that she constantly attacks Donald Duck.
Yeah. Yeah, her and Donald have like a feud situation.
Which is funny because I would like to see them split off and have them do some type of weird, odd couple adventure one day.
They've been pretty good so far with teasing out the different couples that work well together. Like, they've done Webby with one of the nephews a bunch of times, Donald with Beagley. In the dime one, it's just Scrooge in the boardroom with the vultures who are his accountants.
See, to me, you can place Scrooge in any one of those aspects, and it's always going to work because he's the constant. But he doesn't have to be on television the entire time. He can come in spurts, and you're blown away by, okay, I get it. This is based on him, but it's the adventures of his nephews.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it.
You sent me that GQ article about Harrison Ford.
As you know, I'm not really a big Star Wars guy, but, you know, our friendship has really got me invested into this franchise, oddly. And I've been reading more, because GQ is the only magazine that I will constantly read.
Well, it's good. It's a gentleman's magazine.
Outside of just the clothes that nobody could afford because they're ridiculously expensive, they actually have good articles.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an article about sex trafficking. Then they had Middle America and meth. I mean, there is a lot of articles. There was even an interesting article on Pat Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they have these great writers really write great think pieces in an age where magazines are dead and gone.
Right.
But this is a magazine that just turned 60.
And it's surviving.
And it's because everybody always wants clothes and everybody always wants fashion. And, you know, it's because I'm getting older, I'm more of a traditionalist now where I have to have it in a physical instead of a digital.
Right.
I have to feel the pages in my hands. And we'll talk about books in our third segment. But this Harrison Ford article wasn't even about Star Wars.
It was basically about how do you do an interview with
Harrison
Ford. And it's Chris Heath is the writer
of it. Great. I love Chris Heath's
work.
And
it's basically like, you know, Harrison Ford is famous for not wanting to answer questions and being grumpy. So it's sort of
but
like...
But is that a gimmick, though?
I don't
or
know.
Is that actually Harrison Ford?
I think it might be a gimmick now, but I think in the 80s it wasn't a gimmick. I think there was, you know, if you watch him on, like, old Letterman's, where Letterman, like, this one where Letterman takes out a lunchbox, and he's like, that's you in a lunchbox, and he's like... Yeah. He looks genuinely like angry. I think it's a bit of a gimmick now, but it's a great article because it's like a meta of like it's an interview, but also there's the sort of first person sort of stream of conscious of Chris Heath going, and I knew he was lying here, or I knew if I asked him this, he would say this.
See, and Heath knew how to play him too, because he even said it several times in the article. Well, if I ask him this, he's not going to open up even further.
And Heath did his research because he's like, you know, he has stories. Harrison Ford has stories that he tells over and over again. So he's like, I know he's going to want to tell these stories. How do I get him to tell different stories? It's sort of like a cat and mouse sort of psychological game he's playing with Harrison Ford.
Like, I didn't know that Harrison Ford was one of the last of the contract players for movie studios.
Me neither. I mean, he is that old, but he talks about, like, yeah, if you weren't doing a movie, you'd have to go dressed up in a suit every day like it was work, and they make you go to acting classes.
And he hated it. And they wanted him to change his name, too.
He was like Rocky Balboa, because he was – at 35, he was like, I guess this is it. I'm never going to do anything.
I'm going to become a carpenter.
Yeah, and then Star Wars happens. You know whose carpenter he was? Joan Didion.
Really?
Yeah, I was just watching. HBO has a new Joan Didion biography, which is made by her nephew, Griffin Dunn. And they start interviewing Harrison Ford. I'm like, what does Harrison Ford have to know about this? And he's like, yeah, I made their summer house, but then we became friends. I was over for dinner with my kids all the time. And I was like,
I wonder
this?
If he still does carpentry.
No, I think mostly now he likes to fly around.
His frittata obsession as
yeah.
well. I thought that was like, okay.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I like the word frittata.
I like the fact that he wanted to talk about his son, but he pulled back from doing it because he said that his son would be embarrassed if he talked about
it. Yeah, his 16 year. He has a son. He's had three wives. The current one is Calista Flockhart. So who he's still with.
Which is crazy.
And he's got a kid with her that's 16.
Yeah.
Even though he's 75 or something.
Hey, man, that just goes to
He looks great.
That just goes to show that if you eat right and you take care of yourself and you drink plenty of water, and I mean,
he's got beautiful biceps.
Did you see that? Did you see the photo?
Yeah,
He has muscles.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
Like, what?
I mean,
I want to look like that when I'm 75.
I don't mean to body shame the legend Jack Nicholson, but he kind of is in retirement now. Google Jack Nicholson 2017. He is approaching Marlon Brando level obesity.
Yeah.
Like, if you have not checked in on Jack Nicholson in a while, he's big now.
He is definitely not cape shape.
No, he is. Call back to episode one, which you can find on iTunes and Stitcher. But Ford is older than him, even, by like 10 years or something. Because I think he's only like 65, Jack. But, you know.
I think Nicholson is so overrated.
Well.
Come on.
We'll have a whole special just on Nicholson. I can't get into defending him now. You know, recently in one of my film classes, I showed Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The lesson was about post-colonialism. He has his shirt off for a lot of that. And my God, what a magnificent man he was.
But that was in a time, too, when you didn't
have
to have...
That was prime Ford, though.
Yeah, but that was also in a time when you didn't need rippling biceps and abs. You didn't have to look like Jason Momoa.
No, it wasn't cut, but it was there. You still saw a six-pack. But he looked like a real guy.
He looked like a jacked professor.
Right.
Who took care of himself.
Right. That movie is just A1 Ford. That's like the best Ford. Or that, or maybe a Working Girl.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah. He gets a Chinese food where he's naked. It's got a real Staten Island at its heart.
Yeah.
You know, that Carly Simon song. Let the river run. Whenever I'm on the ferry, I think of that. The dreamers wake the nation. Come the new Jerusalem.
Hopefully you guys did an X out of this. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to enjoy a toy advertisement because the holidays are rapidly approaching.
Yeah.
This is...
Let the river run.
We'll be back.
Mork with Talking Space Pack says 8 things. Mork Talking Ragdoll says 7 things. When you pull the string, you can never be sure what these two will say next. And here's Mork from Ork. An Ork egg, and Mindy doll, too. 5 fun toys, each sold separately. Mork doll with Talking Space Pack. Other Mork collection toys are each sold separately. New from Mattel.
If there's one thing you can say about our show is that we're woke.
We are the most woke podcast on the history
of
podcasts.
Right, because we're nerds, but we're not like, we're not neckbeardy creeps.
No, no, we get it. We're hip to the game.
Yeah. We're woke AF.
We're woke AF.
Absolutely.
I like that. Use the hashtag woke AF when you guys want to describe us in the iTunes review.
We should really be the ones who take up that hashtag.
Let us know. Review us. Subscribe on iTunes, Pop Culture Man Children. Give us a 5-star review. Tell us why this podcast is woke AF.
What are you obsessed with right now?
Last week, I told you guys it was a TV show. This week is a book.
Second Nature, The Legacy of Ric Flair and the Rise of Charlotte. Who's Charlotte?
His daughter.
Oh, she's just Charlotte, one name?
Well, Charlotte Flair. Now.
Charlotte Flair. Yeah. And they wrote it together with Brian Shields.
Do we want to get into this? Can we really get into like an... Please. I'm going to let you first off just by looking
at... I like how all the quotes on the back of the book are other wrestlers.
Because Ric Flair is iconic.
And Mickey Rourke. To this day, I admire and look up to this great athlete and entertainer, Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke.
But what is this book about? It's about his life?
There's 2 books that Ric Flair has. This one and the first one, To Be the Man, which came out about 10 years ago. Maybe even,
because to be the man,
you have to beat the man.
Sure.
And he was the man you have to beat.
Yeah.
And maybe even 15 years that book has been out since. But this one is just brand new. Mm-hmm. And it starts off when he is about to retire from WWE.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about the weeks leading up to his final match at WrestleMania.
I'm
going to
take a picture
of
that for the Instagram.
So yeah, it talks about the trepidation that he felt because he didn't want to retire at that point. He felt that he still could wrestle.
So was this one of those things where...
Well, Vince McMahon made him retire because I interviewed him a while ago and he said that it was Vince's decision and that was it. There was no way I was fighting.
Well, how old is the gentleman?
He's in his 70s now.
Can you still do it at that age?
I think... I don't know, man. Like, taking a bump? I don't know.
So,
that's rough on the
body. But would he have kept going?
Ric Flair?
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have died in the ring if he had it.
So maybe, you know... It was a
they just
thing.
Don't want WWE just don't want no liability.
Well,
I can't blame them. But the book starts there, and then halfway to the book, it starts his daughter's journey into her career, professional wrestling, and then the third part of the book. It's a 3-arc narrative. Then
it's Rey, and she's the third generation of Skywalker.
She's the Flair.
No, she's actually a clone of Ric Flair.
She's a clone of Ric. She could be a clone of Ric Flair.
Right, because he's the Nature Boy, and she's the clone girl, because she's not Nature.
Well, she's called the Queen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wait, she's the daughter.
Queen. The daughter, yeah.
Yeah, she's the Queen.
She's the Queen. Then it tells her story, and then in the third part, it's them interacting together in the book.
Okay.
It's a really...
Well, in what way? Like a dialogue?
Yeah, it's like they're telling the story together now. I don't want to give it away because I want you to go to a brick-and-mortar store and I want you to purchase this book. And I want you... And if you want to mess with the Kindle...
You know what? Get into it. I'm not a wrestling fan. Please tell me what about this gentleman's life and this girl's life that will draw me in just as a reader.
Okay. Ric Flair is just... He's up there in the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling.
With who else, by the way?
Well, some people can dispute, but I think in the annals of wrestling pop culture and lore, it's... Ric Flair, it's John Cena, mm-hmm. it's Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and mm-hmm. The Rock. You could, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those are the guys. Like, you could take one out because Mount Rushmore is 4. You could put in whoever you want.
Right.
But I think those 5 gentlemen now transcend the idea of just professional wrestling, and we can look at it from the context of pop culture, not mm-hmm. necessarily just pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
For what it is. You know, I think if you were to show...
It's an entertainment spectacle.
Well, if you were to show photos of those men... To non-wrestling fans,
yeah.
People would know who those gentlemen
yes,
are.
Yes, absolutely.
So this book, legitimately, Ric Flair's had a wild life. And even just the stuff that he's had in the news recently, where the guy just cheated death.
Is there, like, fun, juicy stories in here?
Yeah,
like,
there's tons. He talks about his divorces. He talks
plural.
About, He talks about his alcoholism.
I love a good alcoholism story.
He talks about rehabilitation for the alcoholism.
How's he now? Is he clean living now?
I mean, he has to now because he almost died because of drinking.
Really?
Yeah, and that was a couple weeks ago.
What was he in a car? What did he just his,
No.
His ticker.
I guess he was just starting. His body was just shutting down or something, man. Like the story is not really out there, but he was in the hospital and he had to get some type of emergency surgery.
Oh.
And then he comes on YouTube and wears a T-shirt that says "I'm not dead yet, motherfuckers."
Beautiful.
And so anyway, so this book talks about a lot of his ideas about. He was wrestling with the idea of retirement, how he didn't want to retire, and then how he went to...
He was wrestling with the idea. You see what he did there?
Punny! Then he talks about going to TNA Wrestling, which is another company, and how he really didn't want to do that. And then it goes into his daughter's career. So then she tells her story about the death of her brother and how that had an effect on her.
Oh, was it her brother his son?
Yeah.
And so his son died.
That has a huge effect on him as well.
That's like What's-His-Face's daughter was murdered.
Who?
The Iron Sheik.
Oh, yeah.
His daughter was murdered.
Yeah. And it has an effect on him and her. And she says in the book that if it wasn't for the brother, she probably wouldn't be wrestling. And wrestling kind of saved her life. And she was dealing with domestic violence at the time because She's divorced twice. So they talked about that. They talked about just the dynamic of father and daughter, Where they really didn't get along for a while. But they always had a close relationship, but it was strained for several years. And how... them doing this together really made them a family unit again. So it's really interesting. And then it talks about Flair looking at his daughter because his career is winding down and hers is in its infancy and it's starting up already.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's really good storytelling. And Brian Shields is just fantastic. He's a New York Times bestselling author.
Yeah, yeah.
And from other
– and he basically did it, right? Whenever there are celebrity books, it'll say the celebrity's name in big, bold font and then with. And then it's like, yeah, but the with guy really wrote
See,
it.
See, I had a Brian Shields on Wrestle Rap, and you can go listen to that on iTunes as well.
I'm not trying to take anything away from
it. No. But Brian, listen, obviously it somebody had to put the draft together and weave the story together.
I just don't see Ric Flair in front of a laptop.
No. But he sat with Brian for hours.
Yeah.
Corresponding in email, interviews face to face. I mean, the same thing went for Charlotte as well. They wanted the truth to come out in it, and it's fantastic.
Do you have a page
bookmarked? Yeah, I wanted to show you that, yeah, because that starts to talk
about... Yeah, I liked in episode one where you read a segment from a book. I thought it was very classy and NPR of us. Can you do that again?
Yeah, let me find it. I actually have the one I want to do.
Let's do it. Emilio is getting ready to read us a passage, as he often does. This from the book Second Nature. You see, the thing about Second Nature is that's a pun because the wrestler in question... went under the moniker the Nature Boy. So Second Nature is like you've got your first nature, and then Second Nature, it comes to you very easily. And then, of course, it's about his second chance at life. It's also about his daughter, who's a second generation professional wrestler.
WCW closing was one of the happiest days of my life. I was sad for the people who lost their jobs, but the company was so dysfunctional and became so unbearable that I said good riddance long before WWE acquired it. The only way I survived was being at the hotel bar with Mean Gene Okerlund and Arn Anderson drinking dirty martinis. The match with Sting was not our best. He came off surgery, and I hadn't been in a ring in months. I performed with a T-shirt on. I didn't want to have the match, but Shane McMahon, Vince McMahon's son, asked me. If I had to perform in a match, I'm glad it was with Sting, and that we were able to close the final program together.
Mm. Deep.
Well, WCW was just a pile of shit towards the end.
How long was it around for?
Well, if we want to even go back to when it was owned by Jim Crockett Promotions, we could say, I don't know, like maybe 25, 30 years.
But oh, wow.
That's... WCW in its own run, it was like the late 80s into almost to the 2000s.
I would have not guessed that long.
It was around for a while. Yeah, because it was part of the NWA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which is the National Wrestling Alliance. So, yeah, it's a real telling book. Brian Shields is a New York Times bestselling author, and so is Ric Flair. And, you know, Mickey Rourke can't be wrong.
I don't know.
But, yeah, so that's what I'm obsessed with. And
that's awesome.
You should go and pick it up.
I'm proud of us that we have books on the show and not just toys and cartoons and comics. That's another place where you and I are different from some of these other shows.
We like to read?
We're actual goddamn grown-ups.
We read books.
Read a book. books about Ric Flair.
Okay, Mr. Paperback from Hell.
Yeah, Paperbacks from Hell, written by Grady Hendrix. So, Paperbacks from Hell just came out. I absolutely loved it.
Why do you love Paperbacks from Hell?
It's written by Grady Hendrix, who's actually a fiction writer. He wrote two really great books, Horror Store and My Best Friend's Exorcism. My Best Friend's Exorcism is really good.
Is it like My Best Friend's Wedding?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. It's sort of a horror comedy, but those are very hard, I think, to do well. And Grady Hendrix has a really good voice. And you feel for the... It ends up being about a friendship. And you feel for the friendship, but there's also broad comedy in it and a demonic possession. Well, Grady Hendrix is really obsessed and into horror novels, like sort of cheap novels from the 70s and 80s. And that's what Paperbacks from Hell is about. It is a sort of... It's a beautiful book. This is one that you really got to buy from a brick-and-mortar store. You can't download this because you're cheating yourself out of all the artwork. The book itself is great, but just for the artwork alone, it is chock full of beautiful reproductions of these covers of these 70s and 80s cheap kind of weirdo books, and that alone makes it worth it. Basically, every chapter of Paperbacks from Hell begins with one popular novel, like The Exorcist or Jaws or Rosemary's Baby, and then goes on to show you all the many ripoffs that were inspired by it. The chapter that's about vampires, they write extensively about the original Interview with the Vampire. I had always, of course, heard of Interview with the Vampire, and there was a film of it in like the 90s, which I never saw, but I remember it coming out. And I sort of was like, you know, I've never read anything by Anne Rice, but I was like, this book sounds cool. Let me give it a shot. And that's sort of what leads me to my actual thing I'm obsessed with right now, which is Interview with the Vampire. The book is outstanding.
Oh, no. I've read the book. The
is
book
that
is
right?
Great. Yeah.
When did you read it?
3 years ago.
What inspired you to read it?
I was up one night. It was about maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, and the movie just came on.
Ah.
And I finished it, and I was like, oh, there's more to this than what this movie leads on.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to read it. And one of my favorite descriptions in the book is the scene where Louis goes to the church,
mm-hmm,
and tells the priest his sins.
Yeah.
And he confesses that he is a vampire and the
yes.
devil. And the priest pretty much shames him and says, get out of here and stop, you know, stop lying. And, you know, what are you doing in the house of God telling lies? What type of joke is this? And the way they describe, like, the church. And first off, I love that type of iconography within religion.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm into. I'm into old churches. I think like St. Patrick's Cathedral is a really pretty church. And I like the architecture, that Gothic style.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I was envisioning when he was talking about mm-hmm. the pews and the candles. Because this is also set in the 1800s.
Right.
That scene specifically.
And there's beautiful descriptions of New Orleans where the characters spend a lot of their life.
This is what? Pre-Civil War. And right around, like, the time of that Industrial Revolution boom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
he talks about the city changing.
Yeah, like the landscapes and how it goes from, you know, trees to skyscrapers later on.
This is actually a quote from the book that I love.
Which is it?
He's talking about monuments. I suppose that is the nature of the monument, be it a small house or a mansion of Corinthian columns and wrought iron lace. The monument does not say that this or that man walked here. No. What he felt in one time, in one spot, continues. It's such a sensual book.
Extremely.
You can smell it and taste it and feel the fabrics that they're talking about. It's so well written.
The sexual overtones between Louis and Lestat, how they're codependent on each other.
Yeah, they're very much a couple.
Yeah, and they're extremely codependent on each other.
And then Louis basically falls in love with,
For those that watch the movie, Antonio Banderas' character.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
What was his name, though? I can't remember, and I just read the book.
Armand,
yeah, yeah. And they're in love. And there's also a sort of pedophilic relationship.
But see, Louis had enough of Lestat's shit.
Yeah.
Because he was really rogue.
Lestat is the villain. And from what I've only read the first book, but from what I hear, all the other books are about Lestat.
Oh, he's a goddamn rock star.
And he becomes a genuine rock star, right?
Yeah.
what the fuck? I love this book, but I don't know if I want to read.
No, you got to read the second one.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a really beautiful scene at the end of Interview with the Vampire where he finds Lestat, and Lestat has a new young guy with him, but Lestat is old, and he's afraid to go outside, and, you know, he's still immortal, but he gets to a point where you're a vampire where if you lose your sort of nerve, you lose your guts, you sort of just sort of
wither.
You wither. And he's sort of crying when he sees Louis, and he's like, Louis, I'm so glad to see you. Please stay with me. And it's this beautiful emotional scene of like him going to see this person that he loved again, but he's moved on. And I know from reading a description of one of the later books that Lestat, they recon that and make it that Lestat never became that, and that Lestat says that Louis just said that in the interview to make himself look good.
Look good, yeah.
The beautiful thing that I got from it was the idea of like, yeah, your body becomes a vampire, but the real turn, the real becoming of a vampire is
soul.
Yeah, it's losing your ethics. And they sort of describe it in this really interesting way that having ethics and having morals and even having empathy is tied into morality. Because if you live forever, you eventually can't have empathy because everything withers around you. So the longer Louis lives, the more he's just like, what's the point of anything?
Even with that whole existential crisis, did you pick up on the Christian overtones?
Oh, absolutely. Book? Anne Rice is an interesting writer because she's been a bunch of different religions in her career.
Yeah.
So she was raised Christian, and then her daughter died, which is what inspired Claudia, which I want to get to her. She's my favorite part of the book. Her daughter died, which is – so she's dealing with her dead child when she wrote Interview with the Vampire. And then she became born again, and she got way super into it. And now I think she's like back to being agnostic. She's sort of gone all around, and you could see that reflected in some of her work. So there's Christian stuff in there, but I think when she wrote it, she wasn't that religious, but she was dealing with, like, this pain of losing her child.
That's indicative in Claudia.
Claudia is basically their daughter. Louis feels fatherly for her, but there's some writing in it that feels very pedophilic, where Louis is referring to her as a lover, and you're kind of like, wait, is he in love with her? Is she his wife or his daughter?
Yeah, you never really know what's going on.
It's kind of both, because when you live over 100 years, you know, she's kind of his wife. She's his partner in some ways, but it's not sexual. Claudia is a 5-year-old girl whose mother died of the plague. Louis finds her and feels for her.
Who is played by Kirsten Dunst in the movie.
Yeah. And she is this adorable little 5-year-old who's like heartbroken. She wants, you know, when we first meet her, she's like, I want my mommy to come back. And like the mother's clearly dead and it's just heartbreaking. Basically, it's like when you have a baby to keep a couple together. Louis is going to leave Lestat, yeah. And Lestat turns her into a vampire and says, now we have a daughter. You have to stay with us. And he keeps Louis there for that reason. But then Claudia is the most interesting character because she's this perfect visual contradiction. She's a baby immortal. She's a 5-year-old sweet little, and they refer to her a lot as looking like a doll. She's like their little doll. They talk about liking to dress her up in the finest clothes because they're rich. But at the same time, after hundreds of years, she's wise. Like they talk about her like reading philosophy. But then they'll have something cute where it's like, and we were walking and she lifted her hands to indicate that she wanted me to pick her up. And it's like, aw.
She's but still a child.
Right. But at the same time, she's like a child in body and a wise old adult. This is a quote when Claudia is trying to convince Louis to kill Lestat. I shook my head, but she pressed even closer to me, lowering her lids so that her rich lashes almost brushed the roundness of her cheeks. See, that's that sensuality. The secret is, Louis, that I want to kill him. I will enjoy it. So I love that she's also evil as fuck, too.
Very cynical.
Because she has been a vampire much longer than she was a human. She was only a human for 5 years. So she doesn't even get morality at all.
No, she doesn't understand what consequence or life or death is.
No, but when you get to the point where she realizes she can't grow, that's when she starts to feel like trapped.
Well, I think the intellectual part of it comes in where she is reading philosophy and she is evolving mentally in certain areas.
But she's still like a little baby.
But unfortunately, you know, it comes to climate and time where your body evolves as well, and that has a psychological effect on somebody as
right.
well, because you can be mentally, let's just say, 300 years old,
right.
and you've seen all this shit, and you live all this shit, And it's a world.
It's like being the doctor, but not being able to regenerate. Yeah,
and you don't change.
And they talk about how she uses it to her advantage. Like she'll pretend like she's a lost child, and that's how she gets her prey. Yeah, she's brilliant. Spoiler alert: she dies in it.
I think everybody's seen this movie.
But supposedly she comes back in the later books as a ghost. Everything I read or hear about the later books
just aggravates you.
Well, let me ask you this: do you know how many books are in the series?
Oh, man. I think like 12?
There's 12.
Wow.
Interview with the Vampire and then 11 sequels.
So get the book. Read the first one.
There's a comic out called Claudia's Story. That's the whole first book from her perspective. I think I might check that out.
Ooh, I like that. We should get those.
Yeah.
Our third episode should be at a bookstore.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that. But you guys let us know what you think. You could tweet me at Emilio Sparks. You could DM Mike Buongiorno at MikeBong9483. Or you can follow our Instagram page, Pop Culture Man Children. Please do so. You can go to iTunes. You can search us as well, Pop Culture Man Children on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Tell us what you like. Give us Mad Buongiornos. That's what I want.
Absolutely. I think we did good today.
So in the immortal words of Animal from the Muppet Babies.
Oh, bye-bye.